You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Green Left Weekly Radio.
There's one newspaper that is independent of powerful capitalist interests, and that is Green Left Weekly.
It's the people's voice, committed to human and civil rights, ecological sustainability, democracy and equality. It presents ideas that the mainstream media won't.
Green Left is a leading source of local, national and international news with analysis, discussion and debate to strengthen the anti-capitalist movement.
It helps expose the lies of the capitalist press and puts the voices of the marginalised and the oppressed at the centre of fighting for a better world and helps us understand the political developments unfolding around us.
Good morning. Welcome to Friday Breakfast on 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. You're with the Green Left radio team. I'm Chloe, and I've also got Jacob joining me in the studio. Good morning, Jacob.
Good morning, everyone. Great to be on the program this week.
Yeah, and thanks for joining us on this cloudy morning, Friday, 31st of October. It's just hit 7:02 a.m., and I think it's going to reach a top of 19 degrees today. So I hope people are enjoying the warmer weather. 3CR and Green Left acknowledge that we are broadcasting on the Wurundjeri land of the Kulin Nation and that this land was never ceded. It was taken by force. We pay our respects to their elders, past, present and emerging. And that struggle for First Nations sovereignty is deeply connected with the struggles against racism, imperialism and capitalism. And as socialists, we pledge to actively fight for decolonization and against all the manifestations of that, such as children being stolen from their parents and communities, the poverty gap, the debts in custody. This always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Okay, so to give a bit of a rundown on what we have lined up for the program, so we'll start off with some headline news at the start, with some updates on the current situation in Gaza. But to give you a bit of a overview of what we have coming up for the program, we're going to be interviewing Zach Schofield, who is a climate activist and the organizer of the upcoming Rising Tide People's Blockade. So we're going to be speaking to Zach about that, and also, I guess, discussing why you should attend the upcoming People's Blockade. Then we'll be speaking to Jen Townsend, who is an artist who facilitates creative experiences and focuses on socially engaged art projects. And he specifically has done something related to journalists in Gaza. So we're looking forward to interviewing them later in the program. Then we'll also be covering some of the latest kind of political developments. There's actually been quite a lot of important political developments that have happened in the past week, and we'll be drawing from the pages of Green Left and other left-wing wing media sources for our news and analysis. But just kind of start off, the first kind of story I want to give a bit of an update on what has been happening in Gaza for the past week. Now, it's been quite devastating, actually, what is happening. And in fact, despite the implementation of the so-called quote-unquote peace deal by the Trump administration, Israel has launched a number of serious attacks on Gaza. Despite the fact that Israel is still claiming that it will adhere to the ceasefire agreement. That's despite the fact that Israeli airstrikes have killed more than 110 Palestinians across Gaza. And this is, I think, really just showing what a sham the kind of ceasefire really is. Gaza is still facing, shortages in terms of food. It's still being blocked access to basic and essential goods. The health system in Gaza is collapsing beyond repair. People are dying in the hospital because of the lack of access to care and so on. And I think, I mean, it's just a really horrible situation. And the other issue that comes to my mind as well is that Israel still occupies a large, significant part of Gaza. And there is, some news stories kind of flowing around as well that kind of analyses this situation. But basically, in the context of the reconstruction of Gaza, essentially Israel has set things up so that, you know, the Israeli occupied areas will probably receive more infrastructural support in terms of its reconstruction, while the Hamas control areas will be deprived, because Israel is essentially still trying to push the issue of disarmament of Hamas as a condition for any kind of real implementation of quote-unquote ceasefire. And there also are, you know, in terms of their massacres of Palestinians, they are repeatedly justifying it by claiming they are acting in self-defense. So really, in reality, nothing much has changed, despite the implementation of this so-called quote-unquote ceasefire. And I think it just shows the kind of, what it reflects really is it kind of reflects the kind of impunity that Israel is allowed to act on. You know, no other country is allowed to do this such, you know, flagrant violations of international law, but Israel still continues to get away with it. And really, there hasn't really been much condemnation from the international community. We certainly haven't heard anything from the Albanese government about the fact that, you know, over 110 Palestinians have been killed in the past 10 hours. And the horrifying thing is that following these airstrikes, Israel has now just said, well, we will adhere to the ceasefire agreement. So they could keep the status quo of the fact that the ceasefire has not been broken and, you know, there's and so on. There's also developments happening around the West Bank as well, which we can't kind of forget about. And I guess, Chloe, do you want to sort of add to that?
Yeah, I mean, people might have heard the Israeli parliament has passed the first legislative step to claim the whole West Bank as Israeli territory. So we can see that this was never really about hostages. I mean, we all know that. It was never about Gaza or Hamas. It's all to construct social license for mass murder. And yeah, like you were saying, Jacob, Israeli is just insisting that it's upholding this US-guaranteed so-called ceasefire, but can fire at any time, calling it self-defense. I mean, Israel has been bombing tents again with F-35 jets that Australian companies continue to make parts for. Israel continues to commit genocide with impunity. They broke the ceasefire agreement almost every single day. And it's really important that we continue to raise our voices and stand in solidarity with the Palestinians and disarm Israel and not the Palestinian resistance. And there's a, I'm wondering if I could read this media release out by the Jewish Council of Australia that was published yesterday. Diaspora Jewish leaders urge action against Israel's killing in Gaza and the West Bank annexation. Yeah, they've just sort of talked about the Netanyahu government, who has ordered the resumption of strikes on Gaza, killing 18 people at the same time as the Israeli parliament has voted to advance the bills that would annex large parts of occupied West Bank. And amidst Israel's continued atrocities, a new global Jewish call for accountability is gaining momentum. Thousands of prominent Jews worldwide have signed an open letter standing with Palestinians to demand world leaders end impunity, apply sanctions, and address the underlying conditions of occupation and apartheid. And the letter states, "Our solidarity with Palestinians is not a betrayal of Judaism, but a fulfillment of it. When our sages taught that to destroy one life is to destroy an entire world, they did not carve exceptions for Palestinians." And this letter just shows that we are a part of a rapidly growing global Jewish movement standing with Palestinians as they face genocide. That's a quote from Sarah Swartz, executive officer of the Jewish Council of Australia. I thought that was important to read.
Yeah, and I think just another thing to kind of highlight is there is going to be a Palestine protest this Sunday at 12 p.m. at the State Library. And I think this November, you know, I think it's going to be important for people to keep up the momentum in terms of, you know, the different protests and actions that you can attend. I mean, really, I mean, what we can kind of say is, despite, you know, while it's clear that this ceasefire is really a kind of a fake kind of ceasefire in a lot of ways, I think it's quite clear that, you know, we have to keep up the gains that we have made from the Palestine movement. The fact that there is such a large number, there is much a growing base of mass support for Palestine. The fact is people are still speaking out. There are still protests happening around the world. And we're also starting to see some, you know, advances in the left, which we'll talk about highlights shortly. I'm talking about the recent election of the new Irish kind of president. So I think, you know, these are all things to look forward to. And then we also have the mayoral election in New York where, you know, left-wing candidate Zoran Mamdani is likely to win. And I think, you know, there is these kind of gains of the Palestine solidarity movement, you know, are reflecting the growing kind of shift in political consciousness. And I think, you know, the reality is people aren't going to stop protesting for Palestine, even if the movement, you know, does slow down a bit because of the fact that we have put a pause on the weekly protests in Melbourne.
Should we go to the song that you wanted to play, Jacob?
Oh yeah, well, I should go start off with a bit of a story about first. So, this sort of says everything about Australian politics, and it's a bit of a ridiculous kind of circus. But Anthony Albanese was kind of photographed wearing a t-shirt of the, you know, prominent post-punk band Joy Division, and the Liberal Prime Minister, you know, attacked Albanese for wearing an anti-Semitic t-shirt. Now, Joy Division did name themselves after, after camps in Nantes in a concentration camp, in a sense that were, you know, basically to give for a Jewish woman to give sexual favors to German soldiers. Now that is a bit of the background, but the thing about Joy Division is Joy Division are not a Nazi band. They were just a post-punk band where that name just kind of started off because they started off as like a punk band, etc. And then they re-changed their music to more gothic kind of post-punk. Now, the idea of, you know, Susan attacking Albanese for wearing a Joy Division t-shirt is just completely ridiculous, because actually it just shows that they're just completely out of touch with pop culture. And the reality is, yeah, Joy Division are not a Nazi band. They don't promote fascist politics.
It's defamation.
Most people who would know that they would have nothing to do with Nazism. So it's a very bizarre sort of reach. But it also shows, what I think it also shows is, it shows that politicians, while they are presiding over having debates about, you know, blaming immigrants for the housing crisis, trying to have discussions about how they can destroy the environment further, and we'll be talking about the environmental bill in Alex Bainbridge's article, it shows that, you know, politicians are not willing to really actually have real discussions about real issues. So they create fake outrage to attack each other over. And actually, probably the most embarrassing thing about Albanese wearing the Joy Division t-shirt actually comes down to the fact that Albanese has very much tried to create this image that, you know, he's a cool, hip, person who's into the hip music that young people are into. But the reality is he's trying to make himself more relatable, but it actually comes off as completely insincere and actually fake, because everyone really recognises Albanese as a kind of hollow politician that doesn't really take a strong stand about anything and will just toe the kind of capitalist line every step of the way in the most dull, boring way he possibly can. So
I'm embarrassed for Joy Division that Albanese's wearing their T-shirt.
Yeah. So we'll go to play. We'll play a track by Joy Division, Transmission, which is one of their more famous songs. You're back on 3CR listening to Green Left Radio, and we were just listening to Transmission by the popular kind of post-punk band Joy Division. Now, we are very happy to be joined today by Zach Schofield, who is an organiser with Rising Tide based in Gadigal land. He has very much been part of... being one of the main organisers of the mass blockade at the port of Newcastle, known as the world's largest coal export, and Rising Tide has been organising these blockades every year, and every year they actually get the mobilisations get bigger and bigger. So yeah, we're very happy to have Zach on the program to actually talk, you know, to our listeners here about why you should actually attend the blockade. So good morning, Zach.
Morning, mate. Pleasure to be here.
So, Zach, what can you tell us about the upcoming Rising Tide blockade and why people should attend the biggest climate what will be the biggest climate mobilisation of the year?
Well, look, what I can say is that the Port of Newcastle is the world's largest coal port, right? That's why we've been doing the blockade for the last, well, this will be the third year, as you said, and we're expecting over 10,000 people to come for the mobilisation across the 5 days from, I believe, the Thursday to the Tuesday, or 6 days, really, depending on how you cut it. And, look, it's a really important piece of grassroots politics, you know, climate protests in Australia. Obviously, over the last couple of years, we've experienced a bit of a slump, I think, in terms of how much climate is actually on people's minds and how much it's influencing the government. Of course, Labor says they wanted to end the climate wars. They've done that by giving free handouts to coal and gas developers, continuing to open new mines, and slashing promised amendments to our environment laws that would actually mention climate change, all to make the development of new fossil fuels easier. So it's a really important thing to get around, because in that context, we've been some of the loudest voices, being the most materially disruptive to the industry at, yes, the world's largest coal port, a really important symbolic and material target on this continent.
Hey, Zach, Chloe on the line here. Can you tell us a little bit more about the program and the type of activities that will be offered throughout the week during the People's Blockade?
Yeah, for sure, Chloe. So, look, the blockade is a protestival. So it's a protest, but it's also a festival. And we have always an amazing assortment of workshops and trainings and activist skill sort of program elements. I couldn't tell you all about that, but I know that we always do non-violent direct action trainings, and we've got a spokes council model of sort of in-situ decision-making. If there are any things that need to be decided upon by the collective, we've got twice daily spokes councils where you can come with your group and be heard. But in terms of the festival stuff, we've got an amazing lineup of artists, headliners, including Lime Cordial, I think are just sold out two Sydney Opera House shows back-to-back. Of course, Montaigne, who's amazing. Mudrat, if folks know, a Gadigal-based punk hip-hop artist, First Nations artist, amazing, amazing people playing at the People's Blockade, all for free. Of course, you know, if you do come across the week, we appreciate contributions, donations, sort of ticket prices for the infrastructure, but it's really, really amazing to be able to advertise all of these incredible artists who are playing, you know, effectively for free. And it's one of the things that's going to help get the people of Newcastle out and about to you know, get us up to those amazing numbers that we've had in the past couple of years and really normalise climate action.
Yeah. So I was thinking, let's talk a bit about the kind of politics of Rising Tide, because, I mean, the reality is, I mean, we're not just organising, the blockade has not just been organised to just say that climate action is a good idea. I mean, everyone, all the kind of major parties in theory say that climate action is a good idea. I mean, maybe not certain right-wing parties. And I guess I want to kind of ask, I mean, what are the type of demands that Rising Tide will be pushing that will very much be challenging the ALP for its inaction on the climate, but of course, obviously, even the Liberal Party as well?
Yeah, so look, the demands of Rising Tide are threefold. The first is to not approve any new or expanded fossil fuel projects. Obviously, that's, you know, absolutely required to do what the science says is required to stop or severely limit the effects of climate change. The second is for the imposition of a 78% export profits tax on our coal and gas exports to actually fund the transition, fund communities like the Hunter, because we always get pinged with, well, you know, that's a great idea, but how are you going to transition? Well, we've got the solution. Make the bastards who created the problem pay for it. And 78% comes from Norway, where they tax their oil exports at a cumulative 78%. And then the third demand is to stop exporting coal from Newcastle by 2030 and actually extend that across to all fossil fuels, because at the end of the day, that's what's required, again, to limit the effects of climate change. I mean, we've already failed the 1.5 degree warming target set by the Paris Agreement. The consequences of the climate crisis continue to get worse and worse at ever-increasing rates beyond what climate scientists actually predicted. And you say, you know, how to challenge the Labor Party. Well, look, I think anyone who's paying attention will probably agree with me that the Labor Party does not care about being hypocritical. The Labor Party does not care about, you know, trying to follow the science. They care about votes and power, as do the Liberal Party. And so we're not here to call the Labor Party hypocrites. We're not here to challenge them sort of on a moral basis. We're here to build power and to disrupt the coal industry and to destroy the social license of the coal industry. Because that's what's required to turn this thing around, is to stop apologising for our actions and just band together with people across this continent who know that time's up and we need to start building disruptive power if we've got a chance of a safe future for my generation.
Yeah, Zach, I love how the Rising Tide activists graffitied a coal ship this week with the words "tax me" on the ship. And Rising Tide's demand to heavily tax coal exports, which is a really important demand. But climate justice is an important theme of Rising Tide. Could you tell us and listeners why it is important to link the issues of climate to social justice issues like Palestine and refugee rights, or even fighting for basic rights like housing?
Yeah, there's a lot of overlap, obviously, with the climate crisis and other social issues. I mean, the impacts of the climate crisis are going to make every single issue on the planet worse, as we see, flood size, famines, political instability leads to conflict, which leads to, you know, unevenly distributed oppression and violence, as we're seeing across this world. It's also connected because the profit motive is essentially the what can be blamed for a lot of the evil that's going on in this world. You know, the fact that private corporations are allowed to create these problems and externalize the impacts in terms of climate pollution. Same goes for privatized housing. And, you know, when these sort of issues pop up, it's the most marginalized people in our society that suffer the most. You know, women and trans folks and First Nations people, people of colour, racialised people across the global south. And same with Palestine, right? You know, it's the military-industrial complex and the so-called, you know, Western world, I suppose, which has decided that some people are able to be sacrificed on the altar of profit-seeking and the altar of geopolitical power. And so it's all connected, it's absolutely all connected. And it's really important to acknowledge that as we fight. But it's in the fighting that people are inspired to join us. And that's really what Rising Tide is attempting to do.
Now, I wanted to go... this is a question that was suggested by one of our co-presenters, who's not able to be here live, but I'm sure you know him well, Zane. He wanted to ask a question about the Tomogo Aluminium Shelter in Newcastle has been in the news this week. Basically, after the owners, Rio Tinto, announced that they plan to close the plant in 2029. Now, this follows Norwegian company Equinor pulling out of a massive offshore wind farm project that was supported by Rising Tide, Hunters Job Alliance and Hunters Union. Can you comment on the aluminium shelter, this huge offshore wind farm proposal, and the question of, like, why, I guess it's important, this question of why building up alternative jobs so the Hunter can transition away from coal exports?
Yeah, so Tomago is in the news often in The Hunter because it's often crying poor, or it's often saying that it needs more from the government to support. Well, we should just nationalise the bloody thing, right? Mm. I mean, it's insane to me and to lots of folks that this is not the conversation that we're having every time a company wants to be bailed out because it has made poor financial decisions or poor planning decisions for its future. The conversation isn't just, okay, well, let's take it then. You know, let's take that asset off your hands because you obviously can't do it without taxpayer support. Let's just make sure the taxpayer gets the benefit of it. And, you know, in scenarios like that, then when an industry or a company or a piece of infrastructure does need to be closed down, it can be closed down with the community interest in mind. But with Equinor, the offshore wind industry, it's the same, right? Like, we know that we need alternate industries, not just because, you know, the climate crisis is terrible and we need renewable energy to replace coal-fired gas, coal-fired power stations, but we have an amazing opportunity to build a manufacturing industry here and to get really, really good at wind power. And that would be an amazing thing for people of the Hunter. Of course, there's lots of really interesting, complex economics about why Equinor pulled out. Partly it's because the government hasn't made it easy enough for them, although, of course, we don't want to ride roughshod over environmental planning laws, but that's not really the point here. The point is that the world is complex, and if you leave your critical infrastructure up to private corporations who want to make a buck, well, they're going to make decisions that's in their best interests, not what's in our best interest. So likewise, I think the solution there is if we had a better tax policy for the corporations that are destroying this planet, then perhaps Australia would have more money and a bit more sense to just go and build the infrastructure of the future ourselves and leave it in public hands, not private.
Yeah, well, thanks, Zach. Sorry, did you want to ask another question, Jacob?
Yeah, just one last question. Is because I think another kind of important question before we go into the kind of final comments is rising tide activists were kind of involved in a kind of action where a coal ship was graffitied with the words "tax me." And can you comment on, I guess, rising tide's demand to heavily tax coal exports? Because I am aware there is one Scandinavian country that has been, you know, that has actually made it a bit of a business of taxing coal exports.
Well, so as I said before, it's Norway and they tax their oil exports at 78%. If there's a different Scandinavian country that's taxing its coal exports, at a similar rate. That's news to me, but I wouldn't be surprised. And I guess it's a really important demand to do a couple of things, right? Like, we are demonstrating to people that, you know, while admittedly a simple demand to tax coal exports more isn't particularly deep on policy, the point is that we're telling people that we actually care about economics, right? We actually care about the material circumstances that's going to impact the Hunter, which is what climate activists get accused of all the time, is being idealistic and not having those material aspects of economics in mind. Well, actually, we've got them in mind much more clearly than anyone else. So the federal government has said that, you know, based on the domestic energy policy of China, Japan, Korea, these are our major trading partners for coal, we're anticipating a drop in coal exports in terms of quantity by at least 41% to 52% by 2030. And if you extend that out to 2035, we're looking at drops of somewhere between 70% to 92%. So at the end of the day, this is happening to the Hunter one way or another. There will be tens of thousands of job losses, both in the primary industries and then the related industries in coal towns like Singleton and Muswellbrook. So we're in a position as Rising Tide where we get to say, because we are taking this seriously, that we are some of the only ones taking it seriously. It's a great line of attack, you know, but it's also just within our ethos of wanting the best for people in our region, right? And so I think it's been a really effective part of the campaign, and one that I am really happy to introduce to more climate activists around the continent who perhaps haven't had a chance to engage with a frontline community like the Upper Hunter on an issue like this, and actually start to win over some folks that perhaps didn't think that we were on their side.
Yeah, well, Zach, thank you very much for coming on the show this morning. Green Left, we've been supporting the Rising Tide every year, and yeah, the People's Blockade, it's now one of the most iconic climate protests, so we are really looking forward to being part of it in 2025. I've attended the last two, and they're the cleanest gatherings I've ever seen. Usually at these big festivals, I mean, in this case, it's a protestival, but there's usually rubbish everywhere, and it's not the greatest environment. But Rising Tide, it's completely volunteer run, and there's a real community feel to it. So I'm really looking forward to it this year. And yeah, just before we wrap up the interview, is there any final comments from you, even how people can sign up to Rising Tide and get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So look, Rising Tide, we now have, I believe, 26, 27 groups around the continent. You can find them all at risingtide.org.au. And if there isn't one around you, then send an email to info@risingtide.org.au. You can find the registration also on the website. But look, you know, we're not a membership-based organisation. We're pretty pretty relational. So the thing is to just get involved, come to the blockade, meet some people, and then get stuck into the fight. Because it's not just about the fight. It's about building those connections and those relationships and those skills to carry you through the fight, because it's going to be a fight one way or another, whether you start now or whether you wait for the floodwaters to be lapping at your door. We're having a great time now because we're building power, and we'd love you to build power with us.
We'll see you out there, Zach, and thanks for all your work.
Thanks so much, folks. Take care.
We're not meant to have anything nuclear in our country.
It's really important and urgent that Australia get serious about nuclear disarmament.
Well, nobody anywhere on the planet has figured out how to deal with highly radioactive waste.
Most of those who've managed nuclear weapons consider this to be the most dangerous time that we've ever lived in, with the danger of nuclear war at unprecedented levels.
You're listening to Radical Radio 3CR.
CR, always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8:55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au.
Welcome back. You're listening to 3CR Green Left Radio, your Friday breakfast show. And you were just listening to an interview with Zach Schofield, who's a climate activist and an organizer of the upcoming People's Blockade at the end of November. We're just going to play a quick song before going into more news. I thought we'd play some songs of revolution in Sudan as the world watches Gaza with outrage and concern. Similar tactics are being used by both sides of Sudan's civil war, now in its third year, in order to subdue residents and gain control of new territory. Both the rapid support forces and the Sudanese armed forces are deliberately shutting down markets, blocking supply routes, and looting aid in broad daylight. Across the regions of El Fasher Khartoum and Kordofan, evidence of the slow violence of famine by design can be seen. So you were just listening to songs that have been sung by protesters in Sudan. So music has been an important part of the protest movement in Sudan, and that was a compilation of songs that were taken over social media. I realized as I was playing that it's probably better if people watch the clips as they listen. And if you want to see those clips, it's called Sudan Songs of Revolution, and you can find it on France 24 English YouTube channel.
Okay, so I want to go with start off, you know, following our rising tide discussion, I want to draw from an article from the pages of Green Left. And now this is a bit of a news and report and an analysis from Alex Bainbridge. And the article is titled "Labor Pushes Climate Laws to Suit Fossil Fuel Corporations." Now, probably one of the few things to kind of say about this. The article states that, you know, despite the evidence that we're living in an era of catastrophic climate change, Labor, the Albanese government, is very much trying to insert pro-business amendments to the main federal environmental law, the Environmental Protection and Biodiversity Conservation Act, known as the EPBC Act. Now, the Bureau of Meteorology has, you know, reported that summer temperatures are expected to be unusually high. And a new report, Global Tipping Point, said that the world has passed a catastrophic climate tipping point of coral reef dieback. Now, the EPBC Act requires the federal government to assess matters of national environmental significance when deciding on project approvals. This applies to all major developments, including construction, mining and renewable projects. Now, Labor has been in the midst of this kind of debate in the parliament around amending this act. And the Labor is very much being set to kind of amend this under Environmental Minister Tanya Plibersek. And she had very much had this sort of negotiated position with crossbenchers, but then decided against under pressure from its West Australia branch. Now, the amendments. Now, what do these amendments actually mean? And current Environmental Minister Murray Watt has very much been saying that for months that the amendments that he's working towards will require environmental groups to compromise. Now, Watt is trying to claim that these amendments include wins for the environment. But his big selling point, you know, and it's kind of revealing of the Albanese government, is that it will be a good deal for business by shaving months and years off approval time. So essentially, the amendments that are being put forward by our environmental minister are actually about allowing potentially environmentally destructive projects to actually be approved sooner rather than delayed to address environmental concerns. And what is quite telling is, you know, as is reported in this Green Left article, you know, the Business Council of Australia and other corporate lobbyists are supporting the thrust of Watt's amendments and are pressuring the opposition to pass them. And I think looking at what environmental and community climate groups are saying, who are very much opposed to these proposed changes, I think, you know, the fact that, as Alex sort of suggests here, the fact that Murray Watt greenlight Woodside's Burrup Hub gas expansion in Western Australia in May. I mean, I think environmental groups have every right to be. And I think, you know, the coalition government had attempted to shift approval power to the states, but was successfully resisted by the environmental movement. Now, Lock the Gate said that Labor's current proposal goes beyond failed attempts at state devolution, which Labor once opposed, and I think it really much is show. They argue that state governments have shown they can't be trusted to protect the environment or listen to communities, and you know, it is also pointed out that in some states, such as New South Wales, there's been high there has been these amendments have been sprung on everyone without public consultation. And, you know, corporations have been in close discussions with the federal government for months. And she said, it is really much a betrayal of anyone who depends on the government to protect our natural resources for the good of all. So I think, you know, these laws, I mean, are very kind of problematic. You know, these amendments actually reverse, semi-progressive changes that Labor governments have actually introduced in the past, specifically the water trigger brought in by former Prime Minister Julia Gillard, which, you know, the water trigger gave the federal government explicit responsibility for decisions on fossil fuel developments that affect resource and water resources. And I think, you know, what it really just shows is, I mean, even if we amended these laws to be better, I mean, I think it shows that, you know, the questions of the climate and the environment cannot be relied upon these legislation, because it's clear that either corporations will look for loopholes to exploit these laws, or you just have governments like the Albanese government that will just attempt to kind of weaken the laws over time to the point where they're almost meaningless kind of laws. So yeah, I think this is like, I mean, I think people should be very much be outraged by what the Albanese government is doing, and I think we should have more reports on what this actually kind of means in practice. But I think, yeah, it's definitely, I think, outrageous in a lot of ways. Mm. Did you have anything you wanted to add, Chloe?
Well, yeah, I mean, it just goes to show that we can't really rely on laws or acts of parliament to save the climate or prevent climate breakdown. And yeah, governments have ignored decades of science and pro-environment protests in the name of making profits, in the name of corporate welfare. And this is why, yeah, we are a bit of a way of building a big mass movement that actually carries weight here, but every single action is, you know, counts towards that the bigger goal. And that's why Green Left is a very strong supporter of Rising Tide, the annual people's blockade of the coal ships in Newcastle Harbour, the world's largest coal port. We were just talking about with Zach Schofield before. So that protest, it raises awareness of the need for climate action, but it also reaches out to workers wanting that just transition. So, yeah, I guess, yeah, just bringing it back to any climate action that you can get involved in, please get involved.
All right. Well, we'll go play a quick announcement and then maybe move on to the next story.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Okay, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. So I thought I would go highlight. So we've been kind of talking a lot about negative kind of news in terms of, you know, the horrible situation in Palestine and also, you know, the ways that the Labor government is looking at destroying the environment. Fortunately, there has been some positive news in the past week, specifically in Ireland. So Progressive presidential candidate who is an independent, Catherine Conley, has been voted to be the next president of Ireland. And now this is following a landslide victory in the election held in October 24th, securing approximately 64% of the votes. She won by a wide margin against Conservative candidate Heather Humphreys. And of course, this is in the context of many attempts by the mainstream media to discredit her. And very much it's, but there's a lot of hope that Conley's victory will bring hope that the presidency will give voices to issues close to the majority of the population, including housing, Irish unity, and the genocide in Gaza. And to give you a bit more background on Conley's campaign, so Conley's campaign was supported by very much all the kind of major left and progressive parties, which very much united behind her while criticising the policies of the governing Fiona Fáil and Fine Gael. This was very much a historical election and perhaps a watershed moment in Irish politics in which the combined opposition came together to, you know, very much take on the establishment parties, which said Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald. And of course, we represent a real positive alternative to the stifling politics that has failed generation after generation. And of course, one of the things that Conley kind of emphasised that, you know, if elected, she would continue to speak out on crucial issues, including Israel's genocide in Gaza. The Irish public has mobilised in mass numbers in solidarity with Palestine, with Conley joining protest blocs led by Irish Lawyers for Palestine. Many in Ireland view the Palestine struggle for liberation through the lens of their own historical experiences of occupation. But of course, mainstream political parties in Ireland has failed to act with such public sentiment. And you know, there's been a lot in the lead up to the campaign. There was a lot of smear campaigning, you know, very much you know, very much a lot of people tried to you know, attack her for her support for Palestine. And I think, you know, these attacks failed to gain traction because Conley very much reigned very firm on the question, which is Israel has committed genocide in Gaza, and the normalization of genocide is catastrophic for Palestinian people, and it is catastrophic for humanity. And she very much affirmed the line that, you know, history didn't begin on October 7, and I will stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people as long as I have breath in my body. So yeah, I think, you know, there's, I think this is definitely a very kind of positive thing. And I mean, just another thing as well is the president-elect is also a firm supporter of Irish neutrality and a vocal critic of militarization, and very much has criticized Europe's rearmament agenda and insisting that resources should be redirected towards policies promoting social justice. So yeah, overall, I think this is definitely a positive development.
Connolly's she won in a landslide, I think, and that's a huge shock. It's been a huge shock to the conservative political establishment. So it's this is very good news and a very important development for the Irish left. And it's going to put them in a stronger position for the future. I'm just going to go to a quick break. Stay with us on Green Left Radio 3CR.
This is a rapacious expansion of privatisation, which is going to change the face of the city that we live in.
It's not share, it's not making the housing crisis go away. It's really about the big end of town. It's a shame job.
It's a transfer. It's a theft of public wealth, which is going to worsen the housing crisis.
The government is giving public land to private developers. Why would you do that? Why would you give all these assets over to the biggest bully in town?
We're looking down to a future that we don't know what's going to happen. Where are we going to get moved to? Dandenong? Or away from our communities and away from the services that we need.
This is a line in the sand for not only the public housing tenants, but for a Victorian society.
3CR, here to stay.
I'm just going to go play a song, I Am the River, The River Is Me by Jen Koloha.
Song for you, 'cause I know you're
You're back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. Sorry. That was Jen Kloher and her song. Sorry, I just actually lost it. I am river. I am the river. The river is me. And yeah, we've seen Jen Kloher at Palestine protests, and she's actually... sung some songs and also speaks out regularly in support of Palestine.
Okay, so I'm sorry about that. It is now time for the Green Left Activist Calendar. So to give you a bit of an update on upcoming sort of events, so we'll start off with a few Palestine solidarity events that are going to be coming up. So there is going to be a fundraiser for Palestine on Saturday, November the 1st. Understanding Palestine, and they'll be happening at 2 p.m. at the Mama Shens at 42A Albert Street in Footscray. I also am aware there's going to be another fundraiser for Palestine as well, but I need to double check when that is happening. And then on Sunday, November the 2nd, there's going to be a rally, end the occupation, disarm Israel, and that's going to be happening at 12 p.m. at the State Library, and I think that'll be a very important kind of protest to kind of attend. There'll be another protest for Palestine, but more of the boycott kind of variety on Monday, November the 3rd, and this is going to be a protest against infected mushroom, which is going to be happening at 7 p.m. at the Forum. 14 Flinders Street in the city. And to give you a bit of insights into infected mushroom, are Israeli psytrance band that has been, you know, quite prominent for being very open Israeli supporters.
I'd not even heard of them.
They're quite popular in certain scenes. But yeah, basically they very much have been, you know, very much very pro IDF. They fundraise for the IDF.
They've served.
Anyone who's Israeli has probably served in the IDF because it has mandatory service. So I think, you know, this is a band that has, you know, not just, you know, broken the boycott or performed in Israel. I mean, because it's a lot of artists like that. Mm. This is something, a band that has, you know, openly supported the genocide. And I think that is why we're protesting. They have actually been cancelled by a number of venue managers. So for their controversial positions. And probably another thing to kind of say about them is one of the most outrageous things about them, I find, is that, you know, they have been criticised about their political positions, but then claim they're not political. Well, it's actually very political to fundraise for the IDF. And I think I would have a bit more respect for them if they were at least a bit more honest. Now, some other protests to highlight is on Friday, November the 7th, Marybeck for Palestine is going to be part of organising a protest against another pro-Zionist musician, which is Deborah Conway. So there's going to be a protest outside the Brunswick Ballroom where Deborah Conway is a quite a prominent Australian sort of folk musician who has very much doubled down on her support for Israel. In fact, so controversial that even the ABC stopped her from performing because of her positions on Gaza. Some other things to highlight is there'll be on Saturday, November the 8th, there's going to be the Palestine National Day from 12 p.m. to 10 p.m. And I think this is going to be a great event to go to. It's going to be very much a celebration of Palestinian culture. There'll be musicians, there'll be stores. I think, it'll be a very important event. And Melbourne's really the only city that does this event on a regular kind of basis. Now, some other events just to highlight. There's going to be a rally, Nope to the Cup, on Derby Day 2025 at 10:30 a.m. at Flemington Racecourse, 448 Epsom Road in Flemington. There's going to be a event on Saturday, the 1st of November, International Kobani Day, at 7 p.m. at the Kurdish Democratic Centre of Victoria, 36 Faulkner Road in Pascoe Vale. And then another event to sort of highlight is there'll be a fundraiser, The Right to Live in Peace, a night of music commemorating Victor Jara at 4:30 p.m. at the Maritime Union of Australia on Saturday the 1st of November. There'll be another fundraiser, Festa Madureta, at the 2 p.m. at the Democratus Workers League, 583 High Street in Northcote. Then just some other events to kind of highlight. There'll be a Rising Tide pre-blockade picnic at 11:30 a.m. at Princess Park in Carlton. And then there'll be a fundraiser, Make Art, Not War, at 3 p.m. at the Steps Gallery at 62 Lygon Street. And then just the last event I kind of want to highlight is there is going to be a National Day of Action at November the 15th. Move for Them, What Were You Wearing, at 8 a.m. at King's Domain, Alexandria Avenue in the city. There's quite a lot of different events to highlight, but I just thought I'll just highlight those ones.
Maybe just the community meeting, No Sunbury Waste Incinerator, 130 St. Anne's Catholic Church in Sunbury. That's on November 16th, so mark that in your calendars. We did have an activist, Adam Brabner, speak about it last week's show. So you can head back to that interview if you want to know more. All right, we're going to go to a quick break and stay tuned for our second interview.
All Been Inside is a four-part radio series produced by us, Voices for Change, and it's about our lived experiences of a required brain injury in the criminal justice system.
It is said that anywhere from 40 to 90% of people incarcerated in Australia have an AVI.
Join us on All Being Inside every Saturday in October at 1 p.m. right here on 3CR.
Always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8.55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au.
The revolution in Rojava is a beacon of hope for the world, putting direct democracy and feminism into practice on a broad scale. This radical attempt at social transformation now faces huge challenges, including daily attacks by the Turkish military with little outside recognition or aid. Show your support for Rojava by joining North East Syria Solidarity, or NESS, and help ensure the survival of this inspiring experiment in social change. NESS sends aid, raises awareness, and builds solidarity. Get involved at www.nesssolidarity.org.au. NESS is a 3CR supporter.
You're back with us on Friday Breakfast, 3CR, Green Left Radio. And yeah, you're just in time for our second interview. We've got Jen Townsend on the line with us. Jen is an artist who facilitates creative experiences and focuses on socially engaged art projects. She is of English and Scottish settler heritage and grew up in southeast Melbourne on the unceded lands of the Kulin Nation. She's currently based in Noble Park with her partner and their one-eyed Staffy Chili. Good morning to you, Jen.
Morning, Chloe. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. And I've had the pleasure of meeting Chili, sort of a mascot of the studio. Now, we've got you on the show this morning, Jen, to talk about an ongoing project that you've initiated, a press vest project. Can you tell us about the ideas behind the press vest?
Yeah, sure. So I think any listeners will know that there's been an unprecedented number of journalists killed in Palestine, and so that's been documented across particularly Al Jazeera, and there's an amazing website, Shirin.ps, which is named after one of those journalists who was killed before 2023. And so what a group of artists have been doing in the southeast is making one press vest for every journalist killed. So that's about 288, and each one, they're made of cardboard. They're quite realistic, surprisingly, once you really get a bit of paint and the name on there. And on the reverse is the name and photo of a journalist who's been killed in Palestine.
Yeah, thanks for describing that. And how you've sort of gone into a bit about what it's made out of, but how are you making these press vests?
Yeah, so the idea for the project was inspired really to give credit to the Paper Kites for Palestine project, which similarly is a representation of the children killed, so that's 20,000 paper kites. And it was Lucas who has helped facilitate that project and get it off the ground, and he actually made that first press vest and was just making it for a rally and sent me a photo, and I looked at it and seeing a photo of it could see how realistic it looked, but it was also quite simple and easy to make. So really when I saw that and had the idea back in August, and the catalyst was around the death of Anas al-Sharif, who was a quite renowned Palestinian journalist, and his will has been shared online. That was a real catalyst to make these en masse and do it in a way that has involved community. So being a material physical way where we, you know, have had box cutters, glue guns and paint and needed many, many people to make it. I think the scale of it, you know, at the start, yeah, this is possible. And then as we got in, there's been just so many moments where, you know, there's just 288 is a huge number. And I think making it with community in a studio in Noble Park, Garage 35 Art Studio, which I'm a part of, have all been super supportive, allowing people to just come in and drop into these making sessions on weekends and on evenings over the last 3 months to actually grieve together and make something for advocacy, but also that process of being together in the space has also been, yeah, a really important part, I think, of, you know, I've met so many amazing people, including you, through this project. So it really has dual kind of purposes in that way.
Yeah, and people who have attended the weekly rallies may have already seen some of the press vests displayed amongst the crowd or in some of the photographs. So these are the ones that Jen and the crew have been making with the community. And yeah, Jen, you're right. It is one of the deadliest ever recorded deadliest attacks on journalists. Israel is murdering the messengers, really. They've wiped out entire news crews, and it's really important that you are highlighting that through art. How can people get involved in this project?
So now that the press vests have been made, and thank you to every single person who's been part of that making process, the vests will be going into the city, and I just heard your presenter share that this Sunday, 2nd of November, there is a rally at 12 p.m. There's been maybe a bit of confusion, as you know, it was told rallies were off, but they're still on and still very important since Israel keeps breaking ceasefire. And as you said, we're not hearing as much news from Palestine because there's been nearly 300 journalists killed. So very, very important to stay connected to the movement. And so for the first time, all of these vests will be heading into the city with a group of volunteers there at the rally from about 11 a.m. And we'll be distributing those in conversation with the Free Palestine Melbourne rally organisers. To ensure that they can travel through the rally held individually. So it's going to need, as we know, we have great attendance in Melbourne at these kind of rallies, but still 300 people more or less will be each holding a vest. And so if you weren't already maybe planning and coming in on Sunday, but you can, we really need people there to hold these vests and acknowledge that each one represents a life. So it's become a now quite a sacred object. It requires care, and it'll be a procession through the rally and then gathered back up at the end. And what's now also starting to happen, and which was the hope for the project, is that advocates are getting in touch and activists saying, hey, there's an event I'm organising and I think this art piece would be really powerful to have there. And so if you're someone like that, you can also get in touch and I'll share the best way to do it. There's a website, which is tinyurl, if you've heard of those before, .com/ 270 too many. So 270 too many, and maybe that can go in notes later. There's a contact form in there, and you might say, yeah, I want to help display these vests. Or maybe you've got, you know, a big car and you're able to help transport it. So when someone else gets in touch and says they want to do that, it's going to take a lot of people to help move these real representatives of bodies, a body of artwork, around. And this Sunday's important because all 288 will be there. But as we saw on the 12th of October, for those who were there, there was 30 vests there, and they made it into, you know, the Channel 9 news in the background because they're just, I think, art does something different that and visuals and banners that, you know, words alone can sometimes struggle with. So my hope is that, you know, we might have, and we do have plans for some to be going up to Canberra for the ABC Managing Director's press conference. I think that's the 19th of November, and then heading to Sydney. So really the call now to action is for people to help share them, whether it's, you know, on your campus, whether, you know, we fill a whole lecture theatre with them, or take them to the streets, have a silent vigil. Yeah, please get in touch touch and help all of the work that's gone into the making of it now reach people who hopefully can be as moved as I've been in the process of really seeing the individual faces and recognising the murder of these people, and then also begging that question of why would so many journalists be killed? And people naturally fill the dots there.
It is, yeah, exactly. It is really part of a deliberate strategy, isn't it, to silence on-the-ground reporting. And, yeah, it's a systematic campaign by Israel to hide the reality of its mass killings and its starvation regime and the destruction of civilian life. But, yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show, Jen, and for your work in honouring some of the bravest people in the world and making sure that people don't forget these journalists, that they'll never be forgotten. Was there anything else you wanted to mention before we wrap up the interview?
No, I think, you know, just really looking forward to seeing this out on Sunday and meeting more people who want to bring it out. Although I would just say as well, of hearing recent news, something that has been really sticking with me, of course, is what's happening in Sudan. And just in the last couple of days, there's been, you know, nearly another 1,000 people killed. And just to remind everyone that there are connections across these struggles between Palestine and Sudan, and as an ally, I guess, it's really important we keep elevating the voices of people with the lived experience and with those connections, and know that there's many ways to do activism, and arts is just one, but it's also a way to then move into, as I literally have through this whole experience, started making art and then suddenly, you know, really learning a lot more about the strategic impact of boycotts and meeting people with that speciality and working together across issues and across different tactics. So, you know, if you are an artist and you haven't yet ventured into organising, there's a lot of people needing help to communicate ideas for their events, even making graphics and all that. There's so much you can do. So there is groups out there. There's, ways you can really support and use whatever your skills are across issues really facing the world today.
Yeah, well put. And you don't need to, like you said, be an artist to get involved in a project like this. So anyone who wants to support the Press Vest project, I think, Jacob, we'll put the link of the tiny URL link so people can, it'll be easy for people to just click on it and sign up and figure out how to help, how to join.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Jen, and enjoy the rest of your day. We'll see you at the protest on Sunday. And, we look forward to seeing all of those, all the press vests, all the journalists out there being displayed throughout the crowd.
Thanks. Thank you. In honour of them, and thanks for everyone for, listening and being in solidarity. Have a good rest of your day.
The revolution in Rojava is a beacon of hope for the world, putting direct democracy and feminism into practice on a broad scale. This radical attempt at social transformation now faces huge challenges, including daily attacks by the Turkish military with little outside recognition or aid. Show your support for Rojava by joining Northeast Syria Solidarity, or NESS, and help ensure the survival of this inspiring experiment in social change. NESS sends aid, raises awareness, and builds solidarity. Get involved at www.nesssolidarity.org.au. NESS is a 3CR supporter.
Welcome back to Friday Breakfast, Green Left Radio on 3CR. We're coming to the end of the show, but we're going to play, squeeze a song in there, Brain Rot by Grandson from their new album, Inertia.
I saw the news today, and being human is a losing game. We're doomed to play, numb to the pain, so distracted that we don't notice as our last chance slowly passes and collapses.
Yeah. Watch the world fall off its axis. Watch the bombs go off, paid for by your taxes. Watch the Met ball, watch the brain rot. Watch the GoPro footage of the headshot. Genocide with the right click. Advertisements make you wanna buy shit. It's a constant drip of dopamine, more dopamine. Welcome to the hell we're living in. At the ending of the world we're witnessing. You can cry for help, no one's listening. No. The red carpet, watch the cops shoot the wrong girl in her own apartment. Become a slave to the free market, where you pick up the gun or become the target. Watch the downfall, watch the closing credits. It's over, forget it, you know where it's headed. Straight to the gutter, watch as the winter warms up like summer. Watch it all through your new smartphone, with a battery mined by a child in a war zone. Then pretend to ignorant, watch the cognitive dissonance. Watch the court get stacked, the bad guy win. Watch, cause you're looking at the mess you're in. This phone is a mirror, and I am just a reflection. Dopamine, more dopamine. Welcome to the hell we're living in. At the ending of the world we're witnessing. You can cry for help, no one's listening. No, no one's listening. Welcome to the hell we're living in. And the overexposure is sickening. You can cry for help. Overlapping disaster, intersection of violence. I want to just the maintaining of power in the final hour. I want to just climbing up broken ladders. Nothing really matters. I want to just don't know where to begin. So I shatter the window and then I just
And that was Brain Rot by Grandson from his latest album, Inertia. Hope that woke you up. That was recommended by Matt Ward, Green Left's music columnist. So thanks, Matt, for that recommendation.
Okay, so we're getting to the end of the program. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in this week. If you enjoy the news and the analysis that we bring to you every week, I mean, Green Left is very much committed to the idea of presenting you people-centered left-wing news and analysis that presents a kind of anti-capitalist kind of perspective on current political events. You know, we give a voice to kind of grassroots movements all over the world and all movements of struggles against all forms of oppression. But, you know, to be able to sustain ourselves, you know, we rely very generously on the financial support of our supporters. So if you've enjoyed what you've listened to this morning, I mean, consider becoming a financial supporter of Green Left. You can become a supporter by going on greenleft.org.au/support. And then additionally, I would also like to give a plug out to FreeCR. And yeah, you can become a subscriber of FreeCR by going on to freecr.org.au/subscribe.
3CR is an apartheid-free zone and committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression and firmly stands... And we stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organizations to join us in this struggle. And we also want to thank our guests this morning, climate activist Zach Schofield and art activist Jen Townsend, for joining us on the show. I hope listeners have enjoyed the show. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week, same time, same place.
This brings us to the end of the show. You have been listening to Friday Morning Breakfast with Green Left Radio, brought to you by Green Left Weekly Newspaper, which brings an alternative source of information that puts people and planet before profit.
If you like our work, become a supporter from $5 per month at greenleft.org.au/support or free call 1-800-634-206.
Arise, you workers, from your slumbers. Arise, you prisoners of want.
for reason in revolt now thunders and at last ends the age of Khan. Away with all your superstitions, serve all masses,
arise!
We'll change henceforth the old tradition and spurn the dust to win the prize. That's right, the commies are back, reds underneath your beds and that crack.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.